Everybody wake up.
Time to wake up. Time to start the day. Wake up late with Dougie. He is the only
wake
way.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Everybody.
Wake up late.
Wake up.
It's late. Time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie.
It's time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. What rhymes with Dougie? He's just so funny.
It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Live from Danger Studios. Coral Springs, and now you know.
We're the hottest show in the world.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
I said 1, 2, 3.
Everybody wake up.
Live from Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida. It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Starring Dougie Almeida. Now, let's start the show.
Welcome to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I'm Dougie Almeida, and I'm joined today with two guests. No co-hosts, just guests today. It's interesting. Actually going to be on the Wise Guys Comedy Show tonight. Special guest, Brandon Scott Wolf.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Sounds like an author's name, by the way.
That's a very nice thing to hear. Usually people say serial killer.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a dickhead. And, of course, special guest Ty Rivera, who's staying at the Almeida residence.
Yeah, I'm not a dickhead.
What a great start to a show.
No, well, I'm not a dickhead.
So. I was like, yeah, I'm not a dickhead.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just, I got to put that out there because this is a podcast.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
And there's always new listeners, and, you know, when they join up, they need to know the host is not a dickhead.
Right, like, off the beginning, that's good for them to be like, okay, this guy isn't a dickhead. I'll keep listening.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully they'll keep listening. They usually go, oh, this guy sounds like a dickhead, but... But if you come out and say, I'm not a dickhead, they're like, okay, I'll give him a chance.
Yeah, things we know about the host so far. Yeah. Not a dickhead.
And I don't mind popping peas.
No popping peas for me, though. I don't like popping peas. I don't want to pop peas.
Now, everybody in the room is a comedian, and I know my story. I know a bit of Ty, so let's start with you, Brandon. You were referred, let's see, who was our mutual friend? Was that Dan Long?
Dan Long, yes. Dan Long and I go way back. He actually was one of the performers in Second Floor Stand-Up, which is a stand-up comedy group I founded at Penn State University out of my second floor apartment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, real indie.
Oh, that's right. He went to Penn State.
Yeah, there were no places to perform stand-up comedy at Penn State, and I called a bunch of bars when I was 19, and I said, I saw you have open mic night, and they said, yeah, why don't you come on by? You're going to sing a song? You're going to do something like that? And I'm like, oh, I want to do some stand-up. Is that cool? And they were like, yeah, you can come by and do stand-up. And then I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm 19. Is that a problem? They're like, oh, you can't come and perform. You can't do anything. Hmm. So I bought some mic equipment. I bought a little banner that said Second Floor Stand-Up. I invited some people from a few classes. They invited some people. And then I had about 15 people in my apartment performing stand-up comedy.
That's impressive, starting something from nothing.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's one thing, you know, if you go there, there's a venue, there's a stage, you're like, oh, I just got to bring a mic, or, you know, I just got to have people. So that's dedication. Good. So.
What's the biggest audience you ever had in your apartment?
In my apartment, probably about 25 people.
Okay.
We would, like, hand out beer. There was probably about 5 to 10 comics, and we'd each bring, like, a girlfriend or a friend or two, a roommate, and then we'd all sit around, put on a little show for about an hour or two, and then we'd move forward and just get drunk.
Then an orgy ensues. You know,
yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
That's
cocaine and weed and bongs and all that kind of stuff.
A lot of peas being popped.
Yeah, a lot of popping peas.
We said that before we were recording, right?
Yeah, nobody knew what we were talking about.
No one knows what this is.
We were talking about the equipment and the mics, and I don't have like that little screen in front of our mics in case somebody goes, what? You get somebody in here like, you know, like all the time. I don't mind popping peas.
It's a lot of puh, 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 and then, ah, if the mic goes out. That's what
right.
We've learned. You
if the
scream.
Mic gets fucked up, we scream, and, you know, listen. Yeah, this is somewhat of a studio. We're trying to make it a bit of a studio in here.
It is a studio. There's stuff on the walls that reduce sound.
It's
great. This is it. This is a studio.
My friend Jim Florentine was here, and he's like, this is not a podcast. This is too much shit. You don't need all this stuff. You just need a recorder.
This is a radio show.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I just use H4N. Like, technically, I have all my stuff in my bag in the room I'm staying in right now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I just got for Secret Santa. I finally got something useful this year. I got one of those little recorder things that, you know, direct whatever.
The Zoom recorders.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, and you know, I can't believe how good at you, because sometimes I'm on the road, I'm like, oh, I can't do a show. But now it's great. Like, when you're away, it's like, oh, it's great. You can talk to other comics and even interview people after the show.
Do you take mics with you, or do you just use...
I just take that, just that thing and put it on the table.
That's
now.
That's all you need in a small space, as long as you're not in, like, the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah, with, like, tile floors and...
Right. Get rid of the echoes and just sit down in a small bathroom and be like, this is our show. It's fine. Don't mind that we're in a bathroom.
That's right. Yeah, you can hear the echo where I sound good. So how long have you been doing comedy?
So I've been doing comedy around 8 years.
All right. We're about the same. I'm a little about over 8 years. That's interesting. And are you living in New York now?
I'm in New York. I'm in Brooklyn. I perform a lot of indie spaces, some of the clubs, the UCBs of the world.
Yeah.
And it's been great. I've really enjoyed it. I've been in New York for 4 years. And, you know, you live in the same spot. Thankfully, the rent never goes up. I don't understand what's happening there. And, you know, I don't ask questions. And I just go to my shows and my mics and I go, this is fine.
You ever run into Wendy Starling out there?
Yeah, I love Wendy Starling. Yeah, she's phenomenal.
Everybody loves her. I don't know anybody that doesn't. I just wasn't sure if you had met her or not.
Do you know Wendy Starling?
Yeah, she stayed here in Florida for a while.
Okay.
We did some shows together. Her and I kind of, she talked a little shit about me, I found out, but whatever.
Oh, well, I spoke too soon when I said I was like, everybody loves Wendy Starling except for our dickhead host.
Does Wendy Starling think you're a dickhead? Yeah, what's happening? What's the beef? We have to clear the air.
We shot some shitty little late, it's called Nighttime Miami, and there was a bit where we did like a little scene where I played Willie Bullshittus. I was a BP, this is when the BP oil spill occurred.
Yeah.
And then I was being interviewed by another comedian, Amy Dingler. And, you know, there was no pay, there was no production, it was shitty kind of stuff. And
like most comedy.
Yeah, like most tiny things. And you know, I basically got the sides, you know, the lines and everything at this, there. You know, it was like I had a few days to work on the lines, and it was long. And, you know, I'm like, listen, I'm not getting paid. You know, and so I'm not doing Shakespeare. It's like, I'm like, all right. So she was like getting real miffed about me not knowing, like so unprofessional. I didn't really know my lines. I'm like, I had fucking 30 seconds to study the lines. You want me to remember? So it was just a weird thing. And
I think it's actually abnormal to go to like a sketch that's like being shot and find people that know the lines. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I'm not that guy either. I know there are some people that are good at that. Like I have a friend that has a photographic memory and she's really good about that. But it takes me forever to memorize anything. So it's like, you're going to get a loose version of this.
Do you ever go on auditions and you're just completely, well, I can't memorize anything. This is just going to be embarrassing.
I've stopped going on auditions.
You're just done with it. You're like,
yeah, because I do stand-up only, and I've realized that, you know, since I'm not good at just picking things up quickly, and a lot of times, you know, I don't know what your experience has been, but like with me, anytime anybody wanted me to come in and audition for anything, it was kind of like you get it the night before, and then they want you there the next day, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going to have this memorized by tomorrow. And my personality isn't going to carry it.
Was there ever like a time for you as well?
Oh, yeah.
The audition was just so bad where you're like, well, this stands out and I shouldn't be here anymore.
I was I got spoiled. Like my first few auditions, I ended up getting the commercials and I auditioned for a Shakespeare play, Much Ado About Nothing. I ended up getting that, but it was just a few lines. But the worst things were here in South Florida, I keep getting these Spanish commercials. And I speak, you know, 75% Spanish, in a sense, somewhat fluent. But, you know, I went to this one in Miami, and there's a difference. My family's from Spain. So there's a difference between Spain, you know, Spanish from the mother country, in a sense, and South American Spanish. There's different words and phrases. And I'm reading, and I get there. I'm just reading. I'm like, oh, Jesus, first of all, it's Spanish. Now I really have to work on it. You know, it's like, because I can get the accent down. If I had a couple days, I could practice. But when I'm thinking in English and reading this stuff, and they were saying, if you got a piece of shit car, I mean, shit wasn't in obviously the commercial, but this crappy car, and it was in English that I had to say in Spanish. So I didn't know the word for cracked up car. You know, I'm like el caca, you know, I mean, what am I supposed to do? So the only thing I could think is el cacharro, whatever. I don't know.
What does that even mean?
I don't even know what it means at this point. But
perfect.
I think, I think, you know, leave it up to the interpretation of the viewers. Cacharro means like a piece of shit or something. Like, I don't know. It's like a heap of crap. And the guy's like, hey, you know, and he was, you know, most of the guys who cast you and stuff are gay, you know, and they're like, oh, the guys, you know, you just give me these looks, and I just lost it on him. I said, look, man, You know, you know.
You leveled with him.
Yeah, I'm like, look, you know, dude, I mean, I'm not fucking El Don like, Juan here.
I
you
can't
know?
Do it. I'm not going to be what you want me to be. Goodbye. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. He was like, then he said something like, where'd you learn your Spanish? You know, I was like, yeah.
Yeah, that's ridiculous to me because, you know, I'm Mexican-American and living in L.A., it's always weird to me when people get so offended when others will say speak Mexican, which yeah. I know you're supposed to say speak Spanish. But at the same time, to me, that's kind of right because it's like, no, in L.A., you are speaking Mexican in a lot of cases. It's Mexican Spanish. Yeah. It's different. The slang is different. The accent's different. A lot, you know, like
kind of gives you a frame of reference.
Yeah.
Even more so.
Yeah, that's the way I see it. So, I mean, like, I understand that it needs to be corrected. But at the same time, I'm like, don't get so offended because there's some truth in that.
Yeah, and it's true. And you know, there's... You know, my father was being from actually Portugal and Spain and everything, but they're racist. Spanish people are pretty racist.
Oh yeah,
and you know, like you can't like if you really want to piss off a Cuban, you ask him if he's Puerto Rican,
right?
And then you watch him get pissed. He's like, "Qué pata canete nimo de todo," you know.
See, well, that's the thing. Cubans speak like choppy.
Yeah,
like they have a real choppy like where it breaks, and like in Mexican, like when Mexicans speak Spanish, a lot of times it's just like a flow. Like you almost can't even differentiate between
when you're watching
words.
Like a telenovela, and you're like, "Wow, they are speaking off the charts fast."
Yeah, it's like you can't even really figure out which word is which sometimes. And I'm Mexican, and I get that way where I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, they speak pretty fast, like on the channels.
It's such a shame. I've taken, I think, 6 combined semesters/years of Spanish. I don't know anything.
Yeah. I said on the show yesterday, I took I think it was my freshman year in college. I had a Spanish class. And the lady who taught it was English. She had an English accent. But she lived in South America, and she accused me of cheating on a test.
Like tea time English? Like it's
yeah,
4
no,
p.m.
No,
we're
she's
having
like,
tea?
Oh, you know, everybody, you know.
Yeah.
And, but she spoke, you know, she lived in Ecuador or wherever for a while. So so she learned that. So she accused me of cheating, and I told her the story yesterday, but she accused me of cheating. I ended up getting kicked out of the class, and I won the appeal. Because in the middle of the appeal, I played soccer in college, so everybody was there trying to keep me on, you know, go. And then finally, one of the guys on the board at the college goes, just start speaking to me in Spanish. So I started speaking to him. And like 10 minutes later, they go, okay, we heard all we need. And then they came back like 5 minutes later, like, you go back to class. This is, you've been, you know, you won the appeal.
It's what clear, happened to the teacher?
Well,
she's gone? Is she, oh, just, dude, she just disappeared?
You know what? Now that I think about it, she reminds me of Elizabeth Warren. You know, that dried up fucking cunt politician. I can't stand it. And the only reason I'm saying that,
don't sound like you have a real opinion on Elizabeth Warren.
No, I don't like her because
sounds like you have no opinion.
No, listen, I like to. I'm gonna
you
hold.
You barely
back.
Know who she is.
I'm gonna hold back my real. No, she's one of the people that put together the ruling on the division of labor, which I'm a financial planner of 28 years. So it's basically trying to completely just screw the whole industry. They want to do to retirement what they did to the healthcare system, like healthcare.gov. They want to turn it into retirement.gov, where you deal with a robot to manage your money, kind of thing. So,
well, none of us are ever going to retire. That's not a thing that happens anymore.
Yeah, that's
and ideally as a stand-up, you don't want to retire. Yeah. You want Don Rickles it until you die.
Hell yeah! Isn't that the greatest thing about this? You can really, I mean, you think about it. What are you going to retire from? Oh, I can't work. You know, 30 minutes.
I can't stand it.
I can't do my
hour tonight.
Yeah,
my back hurts. I can't stand on stage and hold that mic.
See, I'm very low energy on stage. I'm low energy now. I can't gauge how much energy I have or I'm giving off. That's
right.
A problem. I think it's part of the reason why I'm bad at auditions to begin with.
Yeah,
why I brought that up. But I gotta say, even if like I'm sick or I don't feel well, I can do 45 minutes of just like standing there and being like, I'm talking into a microphone.
Yeah, I've definitely performed sick, and I'm the same way, low energy, so it's not like I've got to do this animated running around. And I watch the comics that do that, and I'm just exhausted watching them.
Act outs, I don't do many act outs. I know New York City, like I will come to say like Richmond, Virginia and do a show and the comics there will watch me and they'll go, you are such a New York City comic. And I'm like, why? And they're like, you didn't move. You just had great tight jokes. And I'm like, but what does that mean? Like in L.A., are there people that don't have jokes? Or is it just acting? What is it? What's happening?
You know, I have a lot of friends on a lot of different scenes, and I performed on a lot of different scenes. Whenever I'm in a city, if my friends will invite me out to, like, open mic, then I'll go to as many open mics as I can when I'm there. Vegas tends to be a lot of act outs and performance.
Yeah.
There are people that have tight jokes in Vegas, but the focus a lot of times is on being as like get their attention as you can. So I think that's what they're talking about.
Sure. So you have to wave your arms and actually make sure people are paying attention and draw them in.
I do what I do there too, and it goes really well. So you don't have to, but that's just the style there. And
for
in
sure.
a lot of cases, that's what I remember. One time I was in Vegas and I heard a comic talking about another comic that was on stage. He was like, yeah, he's typical of LA. He's got a lot of jokes, but nobody's paying attention.
Interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah. Like you mentioned the act out. You know, one time I worked with Pete Lee, and he lives in, you know, he was in Brooklyn.
He's a New York guy.
Yeah, yeah, and he was in Brooklyn. He did a show, and it's like, you know, Brooklyn's different than the city in a sense.
It
it's
is.
It's a little
it
more
the
hip.
The city has a lot of people coming in and out from Iowa or from Indianapolis or whatever. They're tourists that come in. It's America.
And in Brooklyn, it's just more locals and
Brooklyn
people.
Are people like me.
Yeah. And he had mentioned that, you know, when he was in, he was at this club in Brooklyn, another comic had called him a hack because he does act outs. And, you know, it's interesting you talk about that. Like, me, I do, I kind of encompass a lot of things in my comedy. I like to do one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
I like to do a little story. I like to, I do act outs. I do voices and act. Because I think of my comedy as a song. If I heard this, if I heard a song that was just 5 minutes of the same rhythm the whole time, I'd get bored of it. I'd lose it. So I always like to change things up a little bit. But it's interesting that comics will, in a sense, judge in that, like, oh, you know, you're this for that, you know, because of that. And it's like, you know, I don't know. As a comic, you're really just you being who you are, right? Like, in a sense, unless you're
ramped up to 11 or
You know,
whatever.
I mean, Eric Meyer is a Florida comic that's in L.A. Yeah. This guy is just like a battery going off. You know what I mean? He's just high energy, and but that's him. You know, it's like, you know, it's but I can watch somebody do that for so long until it's like, wow, you know, like another guy, Tom Cotter, you know, one-liner comic. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's amazing to watch that guy do one-liners for 45 minutes. It's like, holy cow.
The one-liner comics have it the hardest.
Yeah.
Because they really do have to, that's why a lot of them hate hecklers. Because they really do have to know what their next joke is or else they get lost. It's
building,
just like a bunch of one-liners.
Pacing, making sure that, you know, oh, this one-liner goes before that one-liner, and then maybe I'll pace out like a two-sentence something.
Now, do you guys have like a certain set list or a certain... Like we were talking, we did a show last night in South Beach, and like we got there, we rushed there, kind of thing. And then I got there, and I was up real quick, and I hadn't even thought what my 10 or 15 minutes was yet. And I was like, ugh, you know. But do you actually have the same set that goes, or you change it up a little bit?
I change up a lot. Mainly, if I have a jumping off point, like one sentence, I can just kind of spiderweb map out in my mind. Oh, this word will be in the next joke, so I can branch off over there.
Hmm.
Because like a lot of people say, oh, Brandon's a one-liner comic, but I do a lot of crowd work, and at like a certain time, I can pivot and just kind of change up what I'm doing and what I'm saying on stage. And so like, you might see me, say if you see me like three nights in a row and I'm doing 15 minutes, 10 minutes, and then 45 minutes, you'll see similar jokes throughout the sets, but like they won't come up at the same time whatever.
That's good.
Yeah,
same kind of deal where I will usually know what I want to open with.
Right.
And then from there, I'm just like, we'll see where it goes.
Like last night, before you walked up, did you really kind of have in your mind what
no
you do?
No idea.
Yeah.
And I'd been, you know, yesterday I was on planes and had to get my rental car and then rushed over here. And so by the time we went up, I was just like, you know. And plus, I saw a couple comics that I knew last night and hadn't seen for a while, like Cisco.
Right.
And then Kyle, I had talked to him before, but I didn't really remember him, but we were chatting. And so with everybody talking to me, I didn't have time to think about what I was going to do. So I was just like, whatever, I'm doing 15 minutes, you know, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the fun part about that. That room started off, the first show they had there, I was there and it was an MC.
What room was it?
A place called Ricky's on South Beach. They've been doing it like since November. I did it once and it was horrible because they didn't have it organized. It was the first show. People were meandering and talking and stuff. So, but last night it was great. It was a showcase, and it was great for that venue because somebody doing, you know, New York style kind of thing where you're doing 10 or 15 minute spots, and you know the people keep coming in and you know change it up. Didn't give these people enough time to you know start. Oh, I'm going to get up and do something else.
The showcases, is that mainly L.A., New York? Would you say is that what the vibe is like nationally, or is it just
seems that way to
cities?
Me like mostly every other city I performed at, it's just a standard MC, middle, headliner.
Right.
But in New York, you know, aside from Caroline's, I think it was most every place I ever worked was
because
a showcase.
Like, I recently went up to Boston, and there's the Comedy Cellar.
Right.
Comedy Studio, I'm sorry, not the Comedy Cellar. The Comedy Studio in Boston is always a showcase, but then there's like Nick's Comedy Stop and then
right.
the Laugh House, and that's more of the traditional like MC feature headliner situation.
But that's the way it is in LA, right? A lot of that too?
A lot of showcases.
Yeah.
There's almost no traditional shows in LA.
Yeah. Hmm. Not even on an indie sense. That's even more so just showcase.
Yeah, it's usually a bunch of comics doing. And in L.A., 15 minutes is considered like a long set.
Right.
I mean, usually you're doing 5 to 7.
Yeah.
Some places it's 3, some places, yeah.
Now,
so.
Did you live in New York for a while?
No. I'm from Arizona. I started in L.A.
Okay. And so when you moved and you started doing a lot of shows, you started just obviously open mic nights, right? What is it like starting in L.A.? And
All open mics. Yeah, it was just a bunch of open mics. It took me about 4 years to get on the road. I know a lot of comics that live in different places get on the road a lot more quickly than that. But
yeah.
For me, it took 4 years to actually get on the road.
It's interesting when you think about, like, I have younger comics that'll say, like, what do you need to do and all this kind of stuff. And the best advice I ever got was don't show early. You know, you never want to get in front of somebody when you're not ready, when you think you're, because we know those young comics that think they're a lot funnier than they are, you know, and you got some heat from calling out some people. And
people get mad at me all the time for that kind of stuff. But it's like, to me, there's nothing wrong with it. I think the difference is when I was new, I knew I was new.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't trying to pretend to be anything I wasn't. Like, now these people come in, they do one or two open mics, and suddenly they're like, well, as a comic, well, you're not a comic yet.
Yeah.
I'm not just trying to be an asshole, but you're just not.
Just because you attend karaoke doesn't make you a singer.
Yeah, you're an open micer.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with saying that.
At what point is it, is there like the transition from I'm an open micer to I'm a stand-up comedian?
I would say once you're getting booked regularly.
Regularly, mm-hmm. and can do well consistently.
Yeah, if somebody will pay you to do 25 or 45 minutes or at least do paid shows.
Sure.
Because and it was funny because it transcends. Like, we had a conversation about hobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes, you know, we had a Michael Atchison, a local comic here, went on Facebook and like, look, you fucking hobbyists.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and this guy was funny because, you know, there's some truth to it. I mean, you know, there's some people, like, I'm amazed when I go to an open mic and I go there just to try to work on something, right, or do something, and then I see the same people doing the same shit for the last 4 or 5 years already.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, when have you gotten to the point where you work this out? Are you going to throw it out? You know what I mean?
And then they're mad at the other comics because they're not paying attention. It's like, because we've heard your set for the last 4 years.
Yeah, everyone knows these are your jokes. You're going to always have these jokes. Write some new jokes.
Yeah.
This is where you pause.
Go to different mics. Go
this
travel.
Is where you pause. We all know.
Yeah, yeah.
This pause you're going to give us right now. You just got to hope there's some tourists that happen to fall in that day and you get to entertain them.
There's one guy laughing in the third row.
Yeah.
This guy's hilarious. but the open, you know, to me, it's like I stopped going. We stopped going. Tim Hanlon, who's in L.A. now, he was here out of Florida. Really funny guy, tearing it up on Twitter. By the way, Tim from the '70s. He's getting like 1,000 retweets. This kid. But when he was here, he's on the radio show. He got me back to go to open mics. I stopped going just because of social things. Like, you know, there was like, I don't know. I'm sure you get this here, but if you become a working comic, some of the other comics get a little bitter and they get jealous or they start talking shit. You know. And that kind of goes on. Or
success breeds that. That's what it is. Yeah, people see you become successful. You're writing for that TV show. Oh, you just got a development deal. Oh, why are you at this open mic?
Yeah, and I don't get that because I get a lot of that. I'm on the road quite a bit, and then I'll go to open mics, and people act like that means that I'm failing at something. It's like, no, I've always got to have new stuff.
Right.
So,
right.
Of course, I'm going to be at open mics. I can't, like, I know some comics do, but I don't feel comfortable trying out a bunch of new stuff in front of a paying audience.
Right.
Sure.
Now, with that said, like, I love is when you do longer sets, when you're featuring or doing headline, because that's a great moment. Like, if you had 3 or 4 shows, you know, maybe I'm going to work on, maybe 20 minutes into my set, I'll work on this bit, you know, because it works, you know. But you're right. You don't want to be going out there doing, you know, 20 minutes of new stuff.
Yeah, and one or two, like, you know, I'll just make sure that I know what I'm... In those cases, I usually know, and I just plan it in my head. I'm like, okay, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to do this bit because I know it'll get them back.
Right.
But, yeah, then you can sprinkle in some new stuff, but you're not going to be able to drop 20 of new material in your
right, of course not. No one's gonna want that even. It's yeah, just like, wait, why is Ty talking about cuticles now? And he doesn't seem sure about cuticles.
You're rambling. You're
strange.
just be sure not to pop your peas. But this is the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Special guests, Brandon Scott Wolf and Ty Rivera are here. We're gonna come back with segment two, rightfully named. And we'll probably talk a little more about comedy because this is interesting. I think this
segment two after segment one. I like this show. This is good. It's organized.
It's structured. Okay, there's format. Structure.
I love it.
Yeah, and we'll be coming back with segment two right after this.
This is the Reverend Bob Levy, and you're listening to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. If you're not, you're probably sleeping, you lazy fucks.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show.
Back to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. A little Prince for you. Erotic City. I remember in high school, I used to always play this song when you're going to hook up with a chick.
Not when I was in high school.
No?
No.
Well, you're younger than
I'm
me.
A young guy.
How old are you, man?
27.
Yeah, you are a young guy.
Yeah, too young.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Ty, are you going to tell us your age, or is that something you keep secret?
I will keep it a secret.
Yeah.
I tell it on stage every once in a while, but, you know, in an intimate setting, not for me.
Yeah.
A nice air of mystery. That's right. What I like.
There you go.
Yeah.
Like, I'm turning it. I have a, this is a big year for me. This is, you know, and some of my comedy mentors, like, I don't know if you want to be letting everybody know your age. Just say you're in your 40s. You don't go, you know, up there. And I'm like, does it really matter? I mean, you know what I mean? Does it matter?
Doesn't matter to me. I'm not casting a TV show with you. You know, okay. I'm not a casting director, so.
Okay. Well, if you do speak to him, if I do tell you my age, just keep it.
Sure. I'll knock 10 off. He's 30.
That's right. It's like a unisex life expectancy chart. Just automatically 10 years off.
But you also, at a certain point, you're getting all these different roles, I'm sure. If you wanted to get these roles, you could, you know.
Yeah, but the only thing that sucks about my act, I keep getting the same roles now. Mafia guys and diabetes commercials.
Oh, boy.
That's it.
It's a great diabetes commercial if they're all mafia guys in it.
You talk about open mics. This was a new bit I did. And I finally, it comes out. That's my new role. I'm in a new movie. It's a mafia guy that has diabetes. I'm like, hey, Billy, let's go whack this fucker. Hold on a second. I got to check my insulin level.
That's great.
Yeah. There you go. All right, before the first part of the show, we're talking about comedy, open mics, and the differences of the showcase and traditional stuff. And I want to stick on this a little bit because, you know, it's interesting. We got a lot of comedians and young comics that listen to this podcast, and and they've gotten advice from it, you know. And if there's anything that you can share with comics that are getting started, that you find important, what do you think it'd be?
Do you want me to give you like the real answer, but it sounds like bullshit?
No, I mean, here's the thing. I want it to be useful. You know what I mean? Like some of the advice, like I mentioned earlier, I have comments like, don't be in a hurry to get on to audition for a club. You know what I mean? Like, people you really trust. Like I got the best advice I ever got from people was when they told me, hey, you're not as good as you think. Like, and because that would make me go back and really work on it. You know, not the people that say, oh, you're great, because they don't want to. They don't want to say anything to hurt you or anything. They just go, oh, you're awesome. You know. So some of the best people was honest advice, you know, and I've been an athlete all my life, so I've come like that. So I'm expecting to hear what to work on. You know what I mean?
You want the constructive criticism?
Yeah, I got a thick skin. I can take it. You know, I don't need to be told. You know, I don't want to be pampered. But you know, and like we talk, I book a room, right? I book shows and stuff. So I've had some issues where comics I have to turn down. Like I have a young lady that sent me a video recently because she's going to be in Florida. And I'm like, yeah. She was, oh, thanks for responding so quickly. And I looked at the video, go, oh God, this is not good. I have to, you know, how do I got to come off and say, you know, I don't think it's going to work. You know, I'll refer you to some other places that might have, whatever, you know. But it sucks being that guy to tell somebody something they don't want to hear.
I think what's very beneficial for myself, I even tell myself this, and for other comics, is to just fail and be, you know, able to fail forward. Because you're going to fail a lot, You're going to have some successes here and there, but by and large, you wake up every day, you're going to try something new and it's not going to work out. You have to learn to understand, oh, this didn't work out for me. Figure out why it didn't work out and go back to the drawing board so it works out the next time.
Yeah, don't be discouraged, in other words.
Right.
Or don't be scared to screw up.
Right. At a certain point, you need to just realize, okay, life is about screwing up and then fixing your mistakes.
No, but when does it come to a point where you're that fucking bad and you're never getting any better?
I think when your wife leaves you.
Yeah, that's a
I
sign.
I think that's it. Your kids stop talking to you. You're on the street.
I've seen some people really take off after their wives left them, though. I've seen some people so just maybe, really skyrocket where I'm like, okay,
maybe,
well,
you know,
she
you
was clearly holding
way.
You back.
I got some material now.
Yeah, no, you know, I would say if, as far as advice goes, stop looking for reasons to be offended and remember you're a comic.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I hear so many comics, like new comics, talking about like what's misogynist, what's homophobic, what's racist, and it's like, how is the joke itself?
Right.
Not, you know, how did it make you feel if you were an activist of some sort, but was the audience laughing? Was there a point to it? Was it really hateful? Because, like, being a gay comic, when I first started out, I would hear a lot of comics say the word fag, because I started in 2003, and people weren't as sensitive as they are now. So you'd hear the word fag a lot, and when I first started, I would hear the word fag and I'd be like, oh, this person must not like gay people. But I never said anything out loud and there was no place to blog. It wasn't like now with social media, you know, where you could go cry to everybody.
Right.
I just keep it to myself. I ended up realizing a lot of the people that used the word fag the most were the people that were the most helpful with me. And at that time, it was still very popular for people to be like, I have no problem with what people do behind closed doors, like that type of mentality. Those people that were supposedly all right with it would always avoid me like the plague after the show. So a lot of times what comes out of somebody's mouth is actually the opposite of what they are.
That's interesting. It's interesting you say that because I cover certain subject matters like in race or things like that. And I like telling jokes where people think they know where I'm going and then it completely goes somewhere else and they have no idea.
Yeah, jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
You write jokes.
Is that what those are?
Yeah,
You know, I thought they were, you know what I mean? But it's funny because like tonight's show, you know, sometimes I come out and say, look, if anybody's easily offended, you're in the wrong place. Go bowling, you know, go do something else. Mm-hmm. But this is a comedy show, and Ed, the owner of Tavolino's, are going to be, he's a musician. That's one of the things that works great because he's just not a club owner or a restaurant owner that just cares about he cares about the art. He thinks comedy is the last bastion for free speech, if you think about it. And, you know, we're the ones that care. So, and he used to come out and tell a dirty racial joke here and there, you know, whatever.
For sure.
And he would. But he loves anybody edgy, you know. And if people walk out because they're offended, you know, it's like you come into a comedy show, you know. If you're offended, if you come into a comedy show.
See, but for me, like with audience, I at least kind of get it because they don't always know what to expect. It's other comics that really get on my nerves when they have all these triggers. It's like, you're in the wrong business.
Right.
And then at a certain point, it seems like, are you a comic or are you someone who is blogging?
And that's a lot of what bothers me. Yeah, I don't need you to be an activist right now. I need you to be funny. Or at least, if you're not going to be funny, at least allow me to.
Yeah.
Because I say a lot of things that are not politically correct, but people do agree they're funny. And in a lot of cases, like, you know, people will try to keep me from certain audiences because they think I'm going to be too much for their audience. Mm-hmm. I'll end up at that same venue on a different night and kill it there. And I'm like, clearly, your audience doesn't have a problem with what I'm saying. You have a problem with what I'm saying.
That's true. Now, we're talking about L.A. and New York, the difference. And some people have said to me, like, in L.A., you really can't do jokes about races or people. They just don't go for that. Like,
That's what they try to tell you.
Yeah.
But I rock it. And even you talk about the open mics and how people don't like, sometimes like you. There's a lot of people that hate me in LA because of my opinions on social media.
Yeah.
And so I go to the open mics and these are the same people that I have to perform for. I do really well. So it's just like, yeah, you can have your feelings, whatever you want. But the fact that somebody's funny is undeniable. So you just go and do what you do and let them feel however they feel about it. And I challenge them at the end of almost every set I do. do, because like I'll see a few people looking at me unapproving or disapprovingly when I'm performing at an open mic, and I'll be like, you know, if you have something to say about what I'm saying right now, please, I welcome you. Talk to me after the show about it.
Right.
See how open I am to that.
Comedy is such like a, you were saying, it's the last bastion of free speech. It's right. The last place to go for your First Amendment rights. It's great to be able to watch people from different walks of life and talk, you know, talk about different their point of views and perspectives and whatnot that you don't have necessarily. And so, like, whether you're a GOP supporter, Democrat, black, white, Latino, gay, straight, whoever you are, you can get in front of a microphone and talk to a group of people.
Right.
And as long as you are funny, I think that's all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I've been in New York a lot. I go once or twice a year. I'm usually there,
mm-hmm.
and I've been blessed to be able to perform in different places. I haven't actually performed in L.A. yet. I'm going to be at the Pechanga Casino. That's in San Diego area, mm-hmm. right? And closing that room in May 10th or something, which will be interesting. I don't know if it's the same or similar out there.
Or Barry Neal, or Entertainment Max.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And I don't know how that's. Have you ever performed there?
They're actually, like, that's kind of far out from L.A.
Right.
It's like an hour and a half, so they're normal people again.
Yeah, they're normal, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, but here's the thing. With the comedy scenes here, like, we've dealt with a little bit of that, and Florida's scene's getting a little better, but, like, in New York, it just seemed like there's still rivalries, there's still people, there's still cliques and sense. But there's a little more. There's it's a little more camaraderie and respect. Like
sure, like there's that as well.
You're right. In Atlanta, my friend John Levine, who just moved to Atlanta, he recognized that they're a real strong scene in Atlanta. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of good comics, mm-hmm. and they seem to be a lot more united in a sense where they're not, you know, they're not opposing each other. Where we still have that.
I've heard nothing but good about Atlanta.
Yeah,
the Star Bar is very popular. A lot
great
of people
place
say
on
it's
a market.
Yeah, right.
Phenomenal
yeah.
venue.
Yeah. I haven't been to Atlanta in a couple of years, but. For a little bit there, I was going, and it was, I liked the scene a lot.
It's a great, like that room there, I got to perform twice at now, and that's a great room. It's an unpaid room, but they have a fantastic crowd, and it's like last 2 or 3 hours, that show, and it's just fantastic. You know, it's a fun room, and then, of course, Laughing Skull, and the Punchline's now back open, but it's just a great group, you know, great group of people there. Now do you here's the funny thing. Obviously as comics I got joke around. I've lost all my regular friends. I wouldn't say I've lost them. They're gone. We don't really spend time together.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Is that pretty much happened the same?
So for myself, since I started with a few of my friends a stand-up club at Penn State, a lot of those kids ended up graduating and moving to New York to become improvisers, stand-ups, actors, and I hang out with a lot of them. So my friend base from the get was almost just comics anyway.
Yeah.
So now I have 15 or so friends up in New York who are all trying to make it at UCB or the Pit or wherever, just doing stand up at the Creek in the Cave, doing open mics and whatnot.
Right.
So like, yeah, yes and no for me.
So you started young. See, I started comedy in my 40s. Early 40s, right? I guess at this point. And you know, so I have all these other people that are like, "Hey, can you go out this weekend? We're gonna gonna be doing shows," you know. So and I feel most bad for my wife, you know, because she's like, "Oh, you know I can't go."
But at a certain point you like have to pursue stand-up. You want to do that. That's your passion. That's what
yeah
you
what
do,
I mean
and...
now there's nothing worse than when you have a free weekend, like, and then you got to do regular stuff.
Oh, it's awful.
Isn't that
sure.
the worst? Like
yeah,
when you're sitting out there and you're watching TV at a sports bar or something, and you know, then you go on Facebook and somebody says, "Oh, I'm over here at the, you know, the Chuckle Hut." I'm like, "You fucker," you know.
Yeah. I don't do well without comedy.
No,
I can't function. I just kind of lose it.
Is it? I always found it interesting. Like somebody asked me, like, "Well, what do you do?" I'm like, "Well, the show, you know, it's always interesting when you're at a hotel somewhere, right? And your show's at 9 or whatever, and you have all day. You know, I mean, you try to do things, but it's like it's just that buildup. All you care, mm-hmm. all you're thinking about is when you hit the stage. I mean, that's all I'm thinking about all day. You know what I mean?
I go to the gym, so that's my. You know what I mean? Like that's pretty much all I do.
And then you come back, and then you chill out
before the show. Yeah, I just go to the gym, do some cardio, work out for a little bit. Then after that, it's usually about time for me to start getting ready for the show. And my normal friends, or non-comic friends, I left all of them back in Arizona. So once I moved to L.A.,
that was it.
They're
all
just
I
gone.
Met were stand-ups. And so, yeah.
So that's it. Comedy is the life. You have, that's all you're doing. Like, like we talk about during the week, there's open mics. So you're like, oh, I'm going to go. I want to go do these things. You know, you want to be around it, you know. Well, I had flown, I came back Friday or Saturday. I flew home from Westford or Baltimore. I was doing gigs, and there was a show. There was an open mic kind of show going on. And I was, like you said, I had driven for 5 hours from West Virginia to the Baltimore airport, and then flew for 2.5 hours to get home. And I'm like, you know, my wife's like, oh, you want to go to this place? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, aren't you exhausted? I'm like, yeah, I want to go, you know. And it turned out to be like, oh, you're just trying to, like, an open mic, you're working new stuff. And then while I was on stage, I'm like, I should have just went home. You know, this would have been much better if I just went home.
I think it depends on the quality of open mic or show that you go to.
Yeah.
Because, like, there are those shows that'll surprise you, and you'll be like, oh, wow, there are 50 people here that actually want to see comedy. And then you'll go on a plane ride or bus ride or whatever. You'll show up, and you'll be like, oh, it's like 12 comics who are just excited that I'm from New York City. And
yeah.
That's the appeal of this. I don't want to be here.
Isn't that the craziest? I mean, you brought up something there. I was just going to think, and I lost my track of thought. But, oh, shit. I can't remember now. Ah, whatever. Fuck it. It was important, I'm sure.
We'll edit that part out.
Yeah?
Don't worry.
Hold on a second. Cough.
Post.
Ah! Ah!
There, I coughed on command. Yeah. I did it. I'm a great actor.
but, you know, there. Oh, man, I wish I could remember what the hell it was. At any rate, so, hey, what's next? Like, you're in the eighth year. So what would you say is next for you? Like, what's the thing you're really hoping to achieve in 2017?
This year, I am hoping to sell a sitcom.
I think
that would be a good marker of success at the eight-year mark. Or I'd like to go back in another writer's room. I think that was a lot of fun. The last show I worked for was Best Time Ever with Neil Patrick Harris, which was on NBC. And I loved it. It was so much fun to be one of four writers. But, like, you know, while you're in it, you don't really appreciate it. And then the show disappears or whatever, and you move forward, and you get to do more stand-up, which is great. And then you go, oh, I kind of want to write some more. I kind of want to do this.
Now, with that being said, how'd you feel about the SNL writer who got indefinitely suspended from SNL for her...
Katie Rich?
Yeah, Katie Rich on there. You know, a lot of the comics, obviously, are... you know, standing behind her, obviously, for that and things like that. And when I heard the story, you heard the story about
her?
Yeah. She made a comment about Barron Trump and whatever. And, you know, the first thing I thought was, you know, I mean, things happen. You know, I don't like blame. I'm not a blame guy. You know, if things happen, it's like, I'm sure there's some comic or writer that'll get her spot, which they'll be happy. But at the same time, you know, I kept thinking, like, when you ever do something, you know, and sometimes you do things like, maybe I shouldn't do this or maybe not. And then you do it and you're thinking, oh, I do it. And then something like that happens where it's a life-changing event, right? You think about it. And just the remorse, you know, like I kept feeling for her in the sense of thinking, what was she thinking now? Like, why did I do that? Or fuck it, I did do it. I don't care. This is the way it's, you know, I just thought that'd be interesting. Like, have you ever had something where you did something and it came back and just bit you on the ass?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, I mean, I think about that in the financial planning business. You know, there's a couple times I told some people to go, you know, go fuck them. Like, this is a true story. I was calling people that in the banks, you have a CD list, like people whose CDs or money in an account that was coming due. And you would call them to say, hey, why don't you come in and discuss your options, blah, blah, blah. And I talked to this one lady in a little shitty town called Tamarack, not too far away. And I said, hey, she goes, did you go to Wharton? Did you graduate Wharton or the Harvard School, or, you know, or Harvard or the Wharton School? I go, no, I didn't graduate there. But, you know, she goes, well, why would I want to work with you as opposed to somebody who went to Harvard or the Wharton School of Finance? Now, mind you, this is how I knew I was not going to be a corporate guy. I always say I'm a blue collar guy in a white collar world, but I couldn't hold back. You know, there was voices saying, okay, just handle this. So I said, I got to tell you, ma'am, I didn't go to Harvard or Wharton, but if I did, I sure as hell wouldn't be calling you in fucking Tamarack, now would I? And, you know, that was the comic in me. That was the guy I wanted to be. And that's why one thing I love about comedy, I can say whatever the fuck I want. If somebody likes it or doesn't like it, it is what it is. You know what I mean?
Until you're writing for SNL and you tweet something and then they take your job away.
Now, I can understand it. You know, kids are off limits. And I'm big on this hypocrisy. You know, I don't like hypocrisy in the sense where...
I would agree with the kids are off limits kind of thing in a sense. But, like, if you rewind the podcast 15 minutes, we said you can write jokes pretty much about anything, right? You could be racial. You can talk about sexuality. So, like, as comedians, where is that line? Is there a line?
I think that's fine, but it also is like what you just said, when you're working for NBC, because SNL is NBC or NBC.
Sure.
You know.
A corporation looks at what you're saying and they say, okay, well, we don't like
so
this.
That's where it's different to me. Like if she were on stage as a comic just saying that, but you know, the fact that she works for SNL and the fact that a lot of people kind of want to throw that around as what their credibility is, you know, that's part of their identity. It's like, oh, I can say this because I'm, and it's like, oh no, that's the reason you can't say it.
Right,
is because you work for NBC.
Yeah, that's the danger. Like you, once you get to that level, now you have to almost pull the reins in a little bit. You know, you are in a sense, right? Like what's outstepping your bounds?
Yeah, but then I guess maybe I'm kind of torn on that too because the guy that wrote for Amy Schumer, I can't remember his name.
Kurt Metzger.
Yeah, when he got in some trouble over that, or people were trying to get him in trouble over what he said about the, you know, that rape case, I kind of didn't like that he apologized for it. I just felt like he should have just left it as it was or been like, you know, no, this is why I'm saying this. Like, there's an actual point to what I was saying. Because for me, the point of what he was saying in that situation was just, if you want me to be a participant in ruining this person's life, then I should be able to ask some questions, and it shouldn't just be like, oh, I just said he did this and I've seen proof, so now my proof has to be good enough for you. It's like, well, maybe I don't trust you. I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, this is, I guess, different because we know that this woman actually did say this. It was her words. It was her tweet.
Right. She tweeted out that Barron Trump
would be the first homeschool shooter.
Yeah. Which is a joke. It's not like she just straight up said, I don't like X, Y, or Z, or this kid X, Y, or Z.
Well, wasn't there somebody or an actress, somebody said that or he had Asperger's or something? Or
Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I think somebody should have come after Rosie O'Donnell. That's the hypocrisy that I don't like.
Right.
It's like,
where it's no joke and you're just saying something. Because like right now, comedy, we're kind of living in a roast battle culture.
Yeah, but if you say something about the left, you're the worst person in the world. If you say something about the right, it's excusable.
And I think that a lot of late night shows in particular, it is much easier to make fun of what's going on the right than it is to make fun of stuff that's going on
now,
on the left.
With that being said, like I don't know who your favorite is, but I like Jimmy Kimmel. I like Jimmy Fallon because I think he's really talented. You know, the guy who I just can't stomach anymore is Stephen Colbert.
Okay.
And, you know, I really didn't like him on his show on Comedy Central either, but he's just so one-sided that it's just like I don't care what side it is. If I have to hear the same shit over and over again, it's like, all right, enough's enough. You know, like I know, listen, Donald Trump's an easy target. I mean, the guy is who he is, but at the same level, you know, it's just like, how many times are we going to hear these stupid same jokes? Or, you know, it's almost predictable. Like, what I like about Jimmy Fallon, he makes fun of him, and he makes fun of Hillary. You know, it's like, at least it's in a sense, like, he's a comic, because he's not really, it's not an agenda. You know what I mean? It's one thing if you have an agenda. Like, if you're just going to sit there and just push something like an agenda. Like, George Carlin, which is one of my favorites of all time, I've seen him 8-9 times live. And the problem I always had with him towards the end,
not as funny recently.
Yeah, he wasn't. He just laid there.
Real shame.
Yeah, he was like really deadpan. And
emphasis on the dead. First part.
Yeah,
of that.
But
yeah.
But like obviously George Carlin. I mean, he's one of the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. But in the end, you know, in the last few times I saw him, he just got so political that I didn't come here for you to fucking give me, you know, a speech on politics. If I want to go do that, I'll go to a damn civics meet. You know what I mean?
That's something I try to be mindful in my comedy.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to give people what they're supposed to think or have them ever feel that way. I make sure there's punchlines on everything because it's like, I'm not here to sway your vote or, you know, I'm just here to give you some laughs and that's all there is.
I don't want to sit there and give you my ideology, belief, and then just clap because it's me. You know what I mean? It's got to be funny. Otherwise, it's just not, you know.
I would like to think that when I get off stage, people don't know whether I lean left or I lean right, or if I have any point of view. And I am so straight down the middle. These are just jokes, like set up punchline. These are jokes that, like, I would be shocked if anyone was like, "Oh yeah, Brandon Scott Wolf, he's a political comedian." It's never going to happen with me.
Yeah, I mean, I have people ask me that.
Don't say never, because it'll happen tonight.
This is the thing that's going to bite me in 20 years.
Yeah, whenever you say never, Yeah,
it's gonna happen. Like you're right. I mean, again, I spent all these years in managing money. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people know me like, why aren't you telling jokes about that? I'm like, because like it's just it's like such a part of me that I don't like. I'm just done with it. You know what I mean? I don't even want to get into it anymore. I don't want to talk about it.
You'd rather be the gangster with diabetes.
That's right. That's a much funnier role. Like,
much more fun.
I don't want to be the guy with the fucking tie on telling you to put money in your Roth IRA. That doesn't do it for me anymore. You know what I mean? But it's interesting you say that. Like I don't come off like I don't do political. Like people say, why don't you do political jokes? I'm like.
Like you lean right. We heard what you said about Elizabeth Warren earlier.
Well, yeah, I'm a Republican. Sure. I mean, I'm a Republican by heart, and she's a miserable cunt. But aside from that,
that's going to get you in the future. This recording.
I'm going to be like at the Senate hearing, and it'll, she's going to be in front of me, like, "Oh, you're here." I'm like, "Oh no!"
And you're like, "This is very embarrassing now." Oh no.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen. No, but you know, but that's the thing. Even when it comes to that, I studied philosophy in college, so mm-hmm. I love to hear the story. Whenever something comes up, if I feel a strong way about something, my mind automatically wants to be pulled the other way. Like something's got to be wrong if I feel so strong about something. In my mind, if something seems that clear to me, there's got to be something I'm missing. That's the minute I always think. You know what I mean? There's got to be something I'm not hearing, or like in philosophy we say, you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think America's got to wake up to that. There's a lot of people that don't know what they don't know.
And that's fair not to know.
Yeah.
Some people don't know.
Yeah, there was a guy drilling the one
what
guy
they
who's,
don't know.
Yeah, there was a guy who was drilling in one of these Senate hearings of the appointees, and he was talking about the stock. It was the guy who was going to run the health and he was like talking about, well, stockholders, you know, you took advantage of something that nobody else could get. It turns out because the guy who owns stock in the company, so they issue stock to stock owners. It's something, if you own the stock, they're going to say, we're going to let you get this offering because you're a stockholder. It's nothing private or underhanded. You know what I mean? And the guy was just sitting there with his head up his ass because he didn't realize he didn't know that. He didn't know that. That's because, you know, which I thought was hypocritical because members of Congress could trade stocks with insider trading information. And it's legal. I don't know if you're aware of that. So
I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah, you see, you didn't know what you didn't know. Like, if you are, we're congressmen.
I was checking my Facebook so that you caught me completely off guard. I didn't hear.
Is it looking good on your Facebook? Is your Facebook good? Notifications, nice.
How's it going?
It's popping right now.
Yeah, so
popping like my peas.
His peas are popping. and a lot of likes. But, you know, I don't know. Listen, forget it. You're not paying. It's too boring. If Ty Rivera is not interested in what I'm saying, I'm just going to fucking change the subject.
No, I need to put my phone down.
No.
I am so addicted to my phone. It is a problem.
Yeah. Think about this. I mean, we're talking about that. And mm-hmm. now everybody's got free, everybody can say what they want. Everybody's got some sort of, you know, like that bullhorn. You know, everybody's got one. They can just speak out whenever they want. And I used to do a joke about how freedom of speech should come with an IQ test. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay, but, you know, sometimes you don't want to hear what people have to say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes you just want to shut down, and there is always a button to click where you can log off.
Now, with that being said, we're going to take a break. But if you guys, and with this whole political season, everything that's going on, and all this divide in the country, and have you unfriended or blocked people?
No.
No?
No.
None at all?
No, no, no.
Unfollowed? You unfollowed anybody?
I've unfollowed people.
Yeah.
I've unfollowed a lot of whiners.
Yeah, is that it? Just the bitching, complaining?
Yeah, because, you know, I get it if people aren't happy about Trump. I personally am a Trump supporter, but I get that other people really are not. But when every day it's like the sky is falling, I can't do that with you every day.
I was searching pictures, you know, because especially when Madonna's, when she was on, you know, and she was like, we're in this dark ages. Meanwhile, he's been president for a couple days, and ages usually means like decades or something. And it was funny. I was gonna pull up a video of like rain and storm and like really like the fucking comets hitting the earth. You know, this is the way a Democrat looks at the fucking world right now. And then a Republican walks out and it's sunshine and fucking birds tweeting. You know?
That changes like every 4 to 8 years, though.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is. It's just like, okay, we're gonna be here for this 4 years, and then we'll move over here for that 4 years.
But you're right. I've done that. I really don't want to hear. You know, people that, you know, the guy's a plumber and this and that. And all of a sudden he knows how the free world needs to be run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it. I'm just done with it. And the real question will be: Do you think this will slow down, or is it going to get more and more? You think people are eventually going to get tired of hearing themselves?
No, I think people are very active right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if 5 million people, whether you're pro-Trump or you're anti-Trump or whoever the president is, if 5 million of your own people are going to march and say, hey, we don't like these issues,
yeah,
then what's going to come next, you know?
Yeah. Well, it will be interesting, I would say the least. It's going to be an interesting time.
They're going to start eating each other.
Maybe, if there is an apocalypse.
They're really starting to turn on each other in a lot of those cases because, you know, that's why the whole intersectional feminism is becoming a thing, because they're realizing that they're leaving a lot of people out. But at the same time, there's some people that really don't want to budge on that. And they're like, no, our issues are the most important. And then these people are like, no, our issues are the most important. So like, there's so much infighting that they really don't want you to hear about. And a lot of people really didn't even know what they were marching for. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, we just went out to the march because we wanted to. So there's like the certain group that is really passionate in that, and then there's the certain group that are just kind of numbers and sheep, and they're just there because it was the popular thing to do and they wanted pictures for Instagram.
And by the way, there's an update. There was a woman who lit up one of the Trump hair on fire. Well, they have her photo. They know who she is. Not per name, but they're out to look for
her. Yeah, I saw the photo, and then
she's, you know, chubby Hispanic looking woman, I think.
She looked like a lot like my friend Frank that was just on Roast Battle.
Oh, really?
Comedy Central.
Maybe it was her.
Shout out to Frank.
There you go. Well done, Frank. You need a lighter? Anyway, this is the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show, here with special guest Ty Rivera and Brandon Scott Wolf, who's not a murderer or
It's true, I'm not.
He's not.
And our host Dougie, who's not a dick.
As of yet.
I might have to come back in the third segment and be a dickhead. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Lenny Travis from the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. Listen every morning or Donald Trump will deport you. You homo.
Yeah, welcome back to the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show.
And now, for your dining and dancing pleasure, some international and domestic news you may or may not believe. It's Straight from the Headlines with Dougie Almeida.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. It's time for Straight from the Headlines, where we talk about things from around the world and make fun of it. Because that's what comics do. You ever do political humor? I mean, but topical humor and things like that. You ever like...
Only in packets. If I have to send in a writing submission to say like a Jimmy Fallon or Kimmel, I will put the stuff together. And then for a few years, I contributed to Weekend Update.
Oh, yeah? So cool, man.
They would send me all these headlines and I would have to send back punchlines.
I used to occasionally like to do topical, but I just hated that I'd get a bit I really loved and then I just have to get rid of it.
Right,
and right.
Like, yeah, that was great.
It's how the news works. It's
three
gone.
Days. It was hot for 3 days, and now it's gone. So
yeah, and that was except here's a friend say that like you do these jokes. Like one of my favorite simple jokes was, you know, I'm sure you heard the news about Bruce Jenner being found guilty of manslaughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just simple shit, and but you can't tell that joke. And I can tell that with old people because they haven't read the news really. They still remember all that.
There are certain jokes that like. Over the years, like, old people, poor old people. They don't get the news. They don't have laptops. The old people, they're done.
I know that joke for old people.
You heard it here first. Old people, they're done.
They rarely let them.
Poor, poor old people. The old people love that joke.
They loved it. All right, here's our first story. A woman flew through a tornado in a bathtub and survived.
How? What is this? Elaborate. This is an insane sentence.
A violent thunderstorm tore across the South over the weekend, killing 19 people, but an incredible stroke of good fortune, a bathtub, probably saved the life of a woman sheltering from a twister that carved a 13-mile path in East Texas.
Wow.
Yeah, because that's what they say, if you don't have a storm shelter.
Hide under a bathtub.
Or get in the bathtub.
Yeah.
So I could just picture this woman flying through a fucking tornado like Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz.
It's like her own magic carpet kind of, you know, she's just in the tub like...
She's got like
this
a back scratcher.
A loofah.
She's loofahing her back while she's flying. Hey, somebody shut the window. Jason Hansford, a senior meteorologist who conducted a storm saver, said he spoke to the woman right after the incident. She heard a tornado warning come out, and she took cover in the tub in her bathroom as opposed to being in her living room. The only thing she remembers in the tornado came in from the southwest across her home. At that point, the whole backside of her house was sheared off. Her bathtub was ripped out of her bathroom, and she ended up still in her bathtubs in some woods near the house.
That's so great. Such a great story.
And that bathtub landed.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to picture was the landing.
I mean, that's like the craziest teacup ride you've ever been in.
So when you're watching like The Wizard of Oz and there's the twist they're going and you see like the witch and you see like the witch on the bicycle and you have that flashback, you just imagine just a woman in a bathtub that's floating there as well. And it's just like, I don't know why I'm here, Dorothy. Why isn't anyone helping me?
Stop it.
So she doesn't remember the actual flight.
No. That would be funny. Yeah, it'd be funny if she had if she Facebook lived it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Move over, Wright Brothers. It's the first time anyone's ever manned a bathtub. Flown a bathtub.
It's just amazing that she said she didn't land and crash and, you know, on, you know. The bathtub, it's just funny, like, it lands in the fucking woods and like in a bunch of bushes and trees and
that's
shit.
That's so lucky.
She better keep that bathtub.
I'm telling you. She ain't gonna, well, the house is a piece of shit now, but.
That bathtub is gonna be in the Smithsonian.
It should be. Think about that. Right? It's like the space capsule.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they're gonna probably make.
Right next to John Glenn's suit, and then there's this woman's bathtub. It's amazing.
Now here's a woman who's not going to be considered the same to the rest of this country. A Florida woman arrested for pelting police officer with her wet used tampon.
Why is it always Florida?
Yeah, Florida's nuts. I mean, this is what happens here. A Florida woman was arrested last night after she pelted a cop with a wet used tampon, which a police report characterized as a deadly weapon. You ought to see this woman, you'd agree. According to the cops, Takora Fields, 28, was involved in a brawl on Monday night in St. Petersburg.
Takora? I wonder what race she was.
Well, there she is.
Yep, that's Takora.
Look at that woman, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. She looks like she isn't happy to be arrested. Not many people are happy to be arrested.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who's like really like, oh, I can't believe I'm being arrested. This is great.
But
you ever been arrested?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Of course.
Okay.
I was arrested recently. Can I tell you? It's the lamest arrest story ever.
Really?
I was filming a YouTube video on my friend's roof. The cops came, said that we weren't allowed to be on the roof. It's technically trespassing. They cuffed us and they brought us in. This was in Harlem.
Really?
I've been arrested in Harlem for standing on a roof.
Hmm.
How long did they keep you?
About 3 hours, 3.5 hours. And when I was in the cell...
Did you cry?
Oh, of course. Just bawling out of control the entire time. I was wearing athletic gear, and so I had...
What do you mean, like a catcher's mask?
No. I was wearing like boxing gloves. I had mesh shorts on and a zip-up hoodie with no sleeves and no shirt underneath.
And a cricket hat.
They had to take the piping out of my hoodie, out of my pants. They took my shoes away because they don't want you to hang yourself, you know? And while I was in jail... I'm doing bits with my two friends who I'm filming this comedy thing with, and there's four other people in the cell. They're all talking about how they were brought in for dealing or whatever it is. My pants fall down right around my ankles because of the piping. Missing.
Lucky you.
And then everyone pointed at me and laughed.
I was going to say, you're going to have some new piping in there.
Oh, well, that's not the type of piping I want.
Yeah.
Personally.
If you're in prison, all of a sudden your pants fall down, you know, that's...
Oh, boy,
it's a sign.
Well, thankfully I wasn't in the shower, so...
Yeah.
It's doing all right. Yeah.
Get your peas popped.
You've been arrested?
Oh, yeah.
You're like, yes.
Yeah.
All the time.
Like, how many times?
I don't even know.
Really?
Yeah. When I was younger, I was fucking.
You were like a delinquent kind of guy? Like, stealing, theft, disruption
standing
of
on
roofs. Property?
DUI. There were a few domestic incidences when I was young. Yeah. And then a few other, like, silly little things here and there.
You won't tell us your age, but you tell us that. That's great.
Well, because it doesn't, it's also old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
At this point, it's been a long time. So it's not like it's anything that's active or matters. And even if I were to go into detail about each story, everybody would just be like, oh, yeah, that's very everyday people kind of stuff. It's not like, you know, I was stealing credit cards or anything that anybody would consider me like a piece of shit for. You know, it's just.
Well, you didn't tell a cop to suck your pussy. That's what happened with this woman.
Well,
and then she threw her tampon.
Yeah, to Cora Fields. As Officer Andre Souza investigated the fight, Fields told the St. Petersburg cop to suck a pussy, adding that, I'll hit you with my tampon, you bitch.
And she followed through. You got to get to that.
She is definitely a follow-through-er.
Making empty promises.
Tampon Fields noted was destined for the patrolman's mouth. After issue those threats, Fields was then seen with both her hands in her genitalia area with her pants open. She was then observed throwing a wet white paper object at Sousa, which was the tampon.
Yeah, that's pretty disgusting.
Yeah, it's...
I think she deserves whatever she gets.
We talked very about gross. There was a the other day we talked about one of these at the inauguration, whatever. There was these young guys trying to block the streets from people getting to it, and some bikers guys showed up and emboldened this one guy who was trying to get through to knock him over, and these rebel rats, they don't know what they're doing, and the one girl stood up for the guy, you know, for the bad, you know, the fucking protester guy, and the one guy, the guy who broke the line, he grabs the protester dude and shakes him. He could have beat the shit out of him, but he kind of shook him, threw him to the ground like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And the girl goes up to him, and she spits on him. And I say this, if anybody spits on me, you know, you're gonna get thumped. I don't care who you are, man, woman, or child. If you fucking spit on me, you're going to get the tiger, what's it called, the tiger palm? You know, ridge hand kind of thing? Mm-hmm. You're going to get that ridge hand to the fucking throat. You may not want to spit again.
Your jiu-jitsu master.
Yeah, man.
Tiger palm.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend on Facebook about that. Not that specifically, but like spitting to me is the most disgusting thing you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, like spitting on another person. So when people get beat up for spitting on people, I'm like, yeah, they fully deserve that. You shouldn't spit
on
people.
Who it is, man. I played soccer in college and stuff, so that would happen a lot. Somebody come up to you and spit on you. And you're like, and then, you know, I got red carded one time we're playing, and the guy spit on me, and I did the same thing. I just kind of...
Tiger palm.
I just fucking, you know, gave him that spear hand kind of thing. It's right into there. And to me, the reaction of the chick was funny because you could tell she's, even though she's so confrontational and a protester, when she got struck, she had that look on her face like, you know, like, what the fuck just happened? And nothing better to me, like, I used to do detailed security work where I've had bullets flying by and shots, and we were talking about that kind of stuff, and knife to my, gun to my head, all kinds of stuff. But when you see somebody that gets hit, that's never been, it's the funniest look. Like, I do a joke about bitch slaps.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's great. A bitch slap is great. Because
mm-hmm.
a bitch slap is basically like a warning sign. Like, look, it's going to get fucking real in a minute if you don't check yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And if you do it quick and fast, it's usually like, holy shit, you know, this person, you know, it's a pretty good
this
deterrent.
This person knows what they're doing.
It's
they're
a pretty
kill
good deterrent.
Me.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, because you don't want to be mistaken with the chest poke. You don't want to be the guy doing the chest poke. Do you know who I am? Because if you chest poke somebody, you're probably going to get bitch slapped.
Yeah,
that person gets rocked.
That's
usually.
Right. So you know, if somebody,
they get rocked. And then you go, world star.
Yeah, then you know everybody's going to see.
Oh, yeah, it's very embarrassing. Yeah. You do the chest poke and then get rocked.
Is that, you don't want to be that
guy gets owned. Like, you know.
We were in Epcot at the Food and Wine Festival. We used to always go.
Someone chest poked you. You had the tiger problem.
No, but this gets it's better. This guy. This is the end, and you're drinking. You're wasted. You're eating all day and drinking. You're like, oh, so we're in England in Epcot, and I'm sitting there, and just by chance, I'm like, oh, I'm like, I feel like such a fat fuck because I was full of beer.
Mm-hmm.
And just as I said that, this Spanish guy walks by with his chubby girlfriend. And I said, oh, I feel like such a fat fuck. And as he turns and looks at me like he thinks I called his girl a fat fuck.
Mm.
And so he comes up to me and gets in my face. He's like, dude, what the fuck? I said, dude, come on, man. I'm talking about myself. Calm the fuck down. And he got like up to me again. And I'm like, oh. And he got to look aggressive. So I gave him the old bitch slap. I said, you know, and fucking just smacked him. And he looked at me again with that little, you know, like, what the fuck just happened? And then my buddy, I call him Bronx. He's actually from the Bronx. The guy goes, what the fuck, I'm going to call a cop? And then he goes, he is a cop. And that kind of shut the whole thing down. But yeah, a bitch slap is always good. There's a lot of people that
deserve. Your buddy said that you were a cop?
Yeah, to them.
Wow.
Yeah.
To like pile on of like, you got to move. You got to
keep it moving.
Keep
nothing's
going.
Here. There's nothing here to see. This is interesting. I don't know if people are feeling down and people are protesting and they're not happy about the way things are. Here's a little study that came out. Feeling down, take off all your clothes. Being naked makes us happier and more satisfied with our bodies.
I don't know if you hate your own body. I mean, there's probably like a small asterisk at the end of that headline, right?
You got to have one of those good mirrors that are in some of those
fun
hotels.
Funhouse mirror. You need a funhouse mirror.
I don't know about you, but a lot of the hotel mirrors, I don't know if they make you look thinner.
They do. They're like the ones where you go shopping. And you want to try stuff.
Are
on.
They?
They're probably concave, tilted toward you a little bit, and they're very skinny and long. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because I've got some great selfies. Like in the mirror's like, damn, I look good. And then I get some other ones I take. I'm like, what the fuck happened? Did I eat a whole pizza that night?
Yeah, you know? I've heard Abercrombie is like the mirrors in the Abercrombie.
Really? I only get changed in Abercrombie. I have to drive to the mall 20 minutes every single day. I wake up, I go change, and I'm like, this is fine.
It says here you might think being naked surrounded by a group of total strangers would make you more self-conscious about your body, but it seems the opposite is true.
Oh, around strangers. Yeah. Okay, I thought it just meant just be naked.
Taking part in a nudist activities makes people much more satisfied with their bodies and even their lives. You know, I think that's kind of like, I remember like you in middle school, did you take showers?
No, like, actually. You know? I've never had to do that where you have to shower in front of anyone else.
Like in middle school, I was I had hair on my balls. You know, a lot of in middle school.
Brag alert.
Yeah, I was walking around, you know, and I'm pretty, you know, I felt pretty confident. My junk was pretty good. Not that I got to look at a lot of people's junk, but you know, I knew mine was, you know, I wasn't like I was looking at a button or something down there. So, you know, I after PE, it was like one of, and of course, a few of the black guys. Mm-hmm. Would, but it was only me and my buddy Eddie Seaman, which the name has nothing to do with the story.
What a rough middle school experience for Eddie Seaman.
I know,
sure.
Yeah, but he was a badass too. So he, you know, with a name like that,
he carried
himself
well.
Yeah, he was, you know, he was a martial arts guy like me. We
he
were
could
well
tiger
known.
Palm. He could bitch.
He
slap.
Could tiger palm, and he had like an elf hand. He had like three fingers. He was born with a hand like this, so his knuckles almost looked like a pelota from High Life. It was a badass.
He had a three-finger hand?
Yeah, he was born with three fingers.
Okay. How often would he wear a leather jacket? Smoke cigarettes? He's very tough. He seems very tough. Eddie Seaman.
He was like the kind of guy, like I had soccer friends when I was growing up, and all my soccer friends would be hanging out, and then my buddy Eddie would come over. He had long hair, like a rock and roll, you know, hippie kind of guy. My dad would like, I don't like that kid. I'm like, yeah, but he's got three fingers. Be nice to him, you know. And of course, he would, you know, three finger Eddie, and he always had like girlfriends, like all the hot, you know what I mean. So it's like my soccer friends didn't have hot chicks, but he had, so it was, you know, it was a no brainer. I'm going to hang out with him.
Yeah, hang out with the cool kid with the disfigured hand. That's amazing.
That's right.
Why wouldn't you want to hang out with him? He sounds great.
He is a great dude. And you know, Seaman, you always felt bad about the name.
Was it
S-I-E-M-S-E-A-M-A-N?
Oh boy.
Yeah. Exactly.
The traditional spelling.
Yeah, I had a friend in high school too. His name was Greengrass.
Mm-hmm.
And he sells
popular?
Weed. He still sells weed today. Yeah, it's like how appropriate of a name.
And he didn't change it. It's not like a stage name at all for his selling of weed.
No. I said, look, you either got to start, you know, cutting grass. I'm going to cut your grass because my name's Mike Greengrass. You know, how fucking better can you be?
Stage names. Neither of you have stage names, do you?
Ty Rivera.
is that your real name or is that a stage name?
It's a nickname that I made my real name.
Oh, okay, so you went
through
the paperwork.
You changed your name. All right. Like my real name's Douglas,
Dougie.
But I go by Dougie.
Is that a childhood?
Yeah, it was. You know, to me, it was like people like I used to say my mother called me Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my friends call me Dougie, and my Asian wife's family call me Dog. Like dog, hey dog.
God bless.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, and then when I was a fighter, I was a Muay Thai kickboxer.
Yeah,
I was dubbed the name Always Dangerous.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm only 5'9". I fought super heavyweight, 200 up. So when I was fighting, I weighed 215. I'm 5'9". So everybody I fought was either 4 or 5 inches taller or 40, 50 pounds heavier.
How did that work out with your reach?
I mean, I got devastating low kicks. I used to break baseball bats with my shin.
Did people know that going into the matches?
Sometimes. There was one guy that was talking so much shit. We fought in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an ex-Marine, and he was a badass, and he was like... So he was like, matter of fact, even at the weigh-in, he tried to intimidate me with all this shit and poking me and everything. But, so my trainer sent him a video of me breaking a bat with my shin.
Wow.
And, you know, and I knocked him out in 30 seconds, but he was like 6'4", 248 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you're Dougie Dangerous?
That's why my old strength coach, he said, you're a dangerous man.
Also sounds like an early 90s rap name, Dougie Dangerous.
I know, right? Well, that's my Twitter, Dougie Dangerous. But,
okay.
You know, but yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, why not? And then, you know, all the back, you know, being shot at, having a gun and actually shooting, have shot people myself and choked people out until they couldn't breathe. You know, it's just the little nickname. I don't know if it goes good with comedy. Like one of my old mentors said, "Why always dangerous? What why don't you talk about it? And like, I didn't get introduced last night. The always dangerous Dougie Almeida. I don't know.
Sounds like you're a cage fighter. That's like immediately what people would think.
Right.
Of.
That's what, you know, and that was the name.
Like a Dan Severn type. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Ken Shamrock.
Yeah. Well, Ken's a pussy.
Have you fought him?
No. But I, you know.
Be amazing.
Somebody asked me if I'd fought, would have fought Ronda Rousey before she got her ass kicked again. I'm like, sure I'd fight her. What are you fucking crazy? And she, look, she got beat up. She's horrible.
Her striking isn't where it's supposed to be when it comes to stand-up games.
Yeah, her judo flips and everything.
But she's
dominated.
Still a tough person. She would kick the shit out of me.
Yeah, well, you know.
I can't fight. Look
you think
at me.
You could beat Ronda Rousey in a fight, Ty?
He's really thinking about it.
Yeah, I'd really have to think about that, you know. Because
any professional fighter would beat me in a fight.
That's kind of the way I feel about it. You know, with the training that they've done and they, like, you know, I think when a lot of everyday guys say that, it's kind of more their ego talking than actual, like, what it's like to be in a fight.
There's always a saying, you never know what's going to happen until you get hit.
Mm-hmm.
Because, people ask me, how do you, you know, because I would, people would hit me. I mean, I was good defense and stuff. But I smile the whole time because once you're used to getting hit, like when you train in martial arts, you get hit all day and you're 4 or 5 days a week in class, you get hit, you get punched. You know, it's not, you don't freak out like, you know, you don't fucking lose it.
Yeah, I've been in a lot of fights in my life, but the thing is, like Kimbo Slice, everybody thought he was going to be great when
now,
he went into MMA.
He's dead.
And now he's dead.
It's a shame.
he also
now he's dead. He's
I could beat him in a fight now.
He's also performing deadpan comedy, by the way.
He went the way of Carlin.
Yeah, he got real political and got his ass. No, he actually lived out here. He lived out here in this area. Uh-huh. And somebody asked me about him too. Like he was just a
his
bruiser.
Videos, they all went viral. He would fight cops. He would be like, "This is what we're gonna do."
And you would fight these guys, and you know, when you watch him, half time he's closing his eyes and he's just throwing these haymakers.
Uh-huh.
You know, the whole thing about fighting is just being that, like, always being in control and relaxing. You know, just being in that relaxed state. You know, the minute you get tense, you're fucked up. You know, it's like a car accident. They would say that the reason why sometimes the driver or whatever doesn't
survives,
get fucked up is because usually, you know, but if you get tense and you get
that's why DUI. Usually, like, you know, the person that did the DUI ends up living, and then whoever they hit is dead because, you know, the people that were alive were tensed up and had whatever reaction, where the drunk person just flopped around like a fish.
It's the proper reaction versus, I don't care, I'm drunk.
So next time if you're going to get on a head-on collision, just act like you're drunk.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, motherfucker? And then
or
boom.
Or be drunk.
Have a quick shot or two before the collision.
Like, if everyone was drunk driving, it would be more safe out
there. I'm going to get hit. Where's my flask?
There'd be a lot less... There'd be a lot less death fatalities if we're all just fucked up out there. With that said, that's all we have time for here on the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Again, I want to thank you guys for joining me today. Appreciate it. And we're going to be a Wise Guys comedy show tonight. Although when we air this, you guys will the show will already have passed.
Get in your time machines.
And go backwards. Right. Get in the DeLorean
for sure.
And come back and see the show. And, of course, Brandon, you're going to be in Florida for a little bit?
I'm going to be at the Orlando Improv, if you're listening today, Thursday, tonight at 8 o'clock.
There you go.
Yeah.
All weekend or just the Thursday?
Just the Thursday, right. And then I'm going to do a few small indie shows on Saturday, hang out with friends who I haven't seen
up
for
in
a while.
Orlando?
In Orlando.
Yeah, always a good comedy scene in Orlando, too. Mm-hmm. Well, Ty, we got some shows coming up. You're going to be in Florida for a bit.
Yeah, I've got shows coming up this weekend.
I'll let you know that. You're going to be at the Funky Buddha on Saturday night in Boca Raton. On Sunday, we're going to be, that's, by the way, go to Funky Buddha. It's going to be a fun, it's a great venue.
Last time I was in town, I did that. It was very fun. It was very good, yeah.
Great, right? And then Sunday, we're going to be at the Inkwell Pub, which is a little place in Margate. And then next week, we're at McGurdy's in Sarasota.
Yeah, I'm there Wednesday through Saturday.
Yeah, and I think I'm there Wednesday, but I'm definitely there Thursday through Saturday. Okay. I open up for you. So for more dates, you can go to DougieAlmeida.com. Don't forget to follow the show at Twitter at Wake Up Dougie. You can follow me at Dougie Dangerous. at Twitter and Instagram. You guys?
At Brandon E.S. Wolf on Twitter and BrandonScottWolf.com if you want to check out general info. If you want to go on a date with me, you can go to DateBrandonScottWolf.com.
There you go.
It's the number one online dating site for me, Brandon Scott Wolf.
Nice. You go to AmericasFavoriteBag.com.
If you want to go on a date with
and
you.
You'll find all the buttons for following me on social media.
Well, there you go. Thanks again for listening, guys. We'll be back next week with all new shows. Take care, and we'll see you here at the same spot.
People on Earth can came a voice from the sky on a magical night. And in the colors of a thousand sunsets, they traveled to the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as they landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside. A beam of light hit the ground. Everyone felt the sound of their heartbeat. Every man, every woman, every child. They passed the limits of imagination to the door, to the world. Journey of a thousand lives.